It's time to know your lane.
That guy that I guess he must own the costume.
I don't think he is in
for a rude awakening, because when I had to do the one final gear around the barrel, I heard a rip. And there, it was a significant one.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app and now on TSN 2, which I'm really happy about, that people can now see me sitting awkwardly.
And we've got the crutches laid out on display.
How is the foot?
First of all, it's the knee. I think it's a meniscus tear.
I've been saying your foot for 2.5 hours.
I told you last hour, it's not the foot.
He's got a torn meniscus.
Yeah.
We don't know.
I mean, I've been to two different doctors. I'm still trying to get to the bottom of this. It's a knee problem.
Can you describe your symptoms? Maybe we can have some Twitter doctors.
That's what I need.
Send in.
That's exactly what I need.
To do this.
Guys sitting at home, half goon.
No, but there are people, like, I know I've talked about it before. I think there's firefighters and paramedics that listen to us. I know that for a fact. There are police officers that came up to us in Barrie the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some first responders that would know if you said your symptoms.
My knee is locked. It's excruciating pain.
But can
I don't know what else to say. I can't put much weight on it. I can't walk. I can't straighten it.
Okay.
I'm a medical marvel, dude. I fell down the stairs 2 weeks ago. I blew out my knee standing up. I'm a disaster.
Is it swollen?
Yeah, it's swollen.
Is it sore to touch?
Not too bad.
Did you go on WebMD and try
it? That's the worst part about it. I hate WebMD.
If you went on WebMD, it would circle back that you have a tumor in your knee or something.
I came away thinking I'm going to live for another 48 hours.
Yeah.
Like, I typed in meniscus tear, and I eventually just closed my laptop.
Yeah,
and I said, honey, I think I'm done.
Yeah, that's what happens.
I think I'm done.
Everything on WebMD circles back to you've got cancer.
And the same thing if you call. You know how you can call, like, a nurse?
Yes.
They always tell you to go to the hospital immediately.
Yes,
that's what I got. So that they kind of save themselves, right? Like, you can call and be like, yeah, I got a bit of a scratch on my arm. And they're like, sir, put down the phone, go to the nearest hospital.
Yep.
Are you willing to accept this advice? So I'm terrified to call them, because I don't know what, they're going to send like a helicopter paramedics to the house. And
yeah,
I don't want to deal with it. So anyway, I feel good about the fact that I came in. I'm here. I blew my knee out
exactly.
on Saturday.
You got to give major props to your wife, too. She drove you here. She's got to come and bring you home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a
major pain in the ass. Like, for 48 hours, she had to get me up and down the stairs, get me into the shower.
Dude, you just go couch more. You don't sleep in bed. You don't go upstairs. You just set up shop on the couch.
I went upstairs. I don't know why. I'm with you. I was more comfortable on
the couch.
You're
going to get to a point where you're wearing a diaper on the couch.
I think that was the concern, is if I get too comfortable with this lifestyle, I'll just morph into couch guy for the rest of my life.
And boy, if you have an excuse to get into Peter Griffin mode as well.
One of my biggest fears over the weekend was I am essentially immobile. I can't move. I've been crippled. I can't go to the gym. I haven't been to the gym since I fell down the stairs.
I told you guys.
Our buddy Angelo is just tweeting in saying it might be gout.
It's not gout, dude.
Rich man's diet.
You can't get gout from just, like, stepping strangely
gout
or being
to the
clumsy.
Knee. Gout to the knee.
The gout is a message sender, isn't it?
Yeah.
That you are living a very unhealthy lifestyle. If you've got gout, you eat poorly, you probably drink too much.
Well,
maybe I got the gout.
After Thursday night
in
Barrie,
you've been living
on
rye and Cokes and chips?
That's
pretty much
it,
what we had in Barrie.
Right.
Did we eat anything healthy in Barrie for the 12 hours?
We were disgusting in Barrie. It was just platters. It was a platter night.
And that was even my fault later in the night when I ordered that platter.
Yeah, we were literally grazing on garbage for about 9 hours.
Mozzarella
straight.
Sticks. Who? Like, I didn't even know.
I got the mozzarella sticks.
We did those twice, dude. I haven't had mozzarella.
You doubled down on the mozzas?
Well, I got after yours, and then I got after his.
Well, I ordered those later in the night.
Right. Like, I haven't had mozzarella sticks in 7 or 8 years.
I agree. I can't remember the last time I've had it. Maybe it was like at TGI Fridays in like New York City 10 years
ago. Right. All you can eat mozza sticks on like a Tuesday night. I had them twice in like 4 hours.
I love a mozza stick.
They are good. With the dip, the marinara dip?
I think they're universally accepted as like a great
snack.
Snack, isn't it? Like, who doesn't like a mozza stick?
From Crossovers?
The cuisine was spectacular. Ginny tweeting and saying, what kind of language did your daughter pick up on when you blew out your knee?
Yeah.
It's a bad time because she's very receptive. She's very repetitive. She's picking up on words.
Dropped an F-bomb for sure.
I'm trying to be very, very careful, but when you blow a knee out, it's like Richard Pryor on the Sunset Strip. I mean, I was swearing like a madman.
I've got AJ saying, as a physiotherapy student, your symptoms seem like an ACL may be involved as well.
Uh-oh. That's
gout,
my concern.
Gout and ACL.
I've got the gout. I've got ACL. Wow. MCL. I've got everything.
We've got some diagnosis coming in.
Right.
Well, I hope you're like in all seriousness, I hope your wife is picking you up and you're going to see a specialist. Because you need a diagnosis immediately.
Well, dude, how do you plan on me doing that? Like, what am I going to do? This is the healthcare system. You got to go through a doctor. You got to get a referral.
Could be 8 months by the time you get looked at.
Exactly. Like, I went to see my doctor today, and the MRI is going to be booked, but I don't know when that's going to happen. So until that happens, I'm coming in, and I got the crutches, and I've got my footstool here, which I'm going to sign and leave in the studio once my knee finally gets back to 100%. And, I mean, this is a day that I couldn't miss. Jay's season came to an end.
Yeah.
I think Donaldson put Shapiro and Atkins on notice.
Think so, right?
I think the fact that he is the bringer of rain, he was the MVP a couple of years ago, he is so clearly their best player. For him to come out and say, the way he said it, I went to them to let them know how much I want to be
that
sticking
bothered
around.
You.
It did bother me because, again, Brady doesn't go to Belichick and say, hey, I want to stick around.
Right.
Crosby doesn't go to Lemieux or Jimmy Rutherford and do that. McDavid doesn't do that.
Right.
This guy's the best player on the team. He's the best fielding player we've seen since Elamar. He's maybe the most talented Blue Jay. He's put together a 3-year deal here that is almost unparalleled in team history. And he's going to them and saying, hey, can you please work this out? I don't know, man. I kind of felt like he was...
I see something totally different where he just might have said, look, I don't know where you guys think my headspace is at, but this is where I'm at. I love being a Blue Jay, so that's right. My end of it.
Well, you hope that's the case.
I don't think it's putting them on notice or saying now, like...
But he didn't have to go public with that either. I'm sure he was asked about it. It's an obvious question. It's going to be the biggest story of the offseason. What do they do with Donaldson?
Right.
But now he's put it out there. Hey, I want to be here.
Yeah.
So Edwin wanted to be here too. Remember that?
The ball's in their court.
Remember how that played out?
Yeah, it didn't play out so well.
I'm going to blow my neck out because I have to look this way and I keep looking back on you guys. And
you are agitated right now.
I am agitated because I think it makes sense for them to work out a deal with Donaldson. Be sensible about it.
Yes.
5-year deal. If it's a 10-year deal he needs, trade him. Move on from him.
But what if it's somewhere in the middle? What if he's like... Give me Tom 40. I need 8 years.
I think you walk away from that.
Really?
I do. I think you pay the man. I mean, you're going to have to pay him $30 million a year. But I think you say, we'll give you a 5-year deal at $30 million. That's a lot of money. It's a big commitment, but that's what you have to pay to play the game. He's a top 5 player in the game when he's healthy.
I agree.
When he's performing. If you want to be a contender next year and years beyond, I think Donaldson should be a part of the plans. But...
What if he makes it tough for them and says, I'll take $30 million a year, but I need 7 years?
Well, then obviously...
But that's right in the middle.
I hear you. And then I can understand if they said that's not going to work for us. But I will not be able to understand them saying, we really want you, but we can't give you 5 years.
But
like if they go to them and say, we can give you a 2 or 3 year deal, they're not really negotiating
in good
faith.
That's not even being serious.
You're right. Exactly. You're insulting the guy because you know he's worth more than that. You know you got to pay more than that.
Yeah.
We'll see what Dirk has to say about it in about 20 minutes. The Leafs coming off a couple of games over the weekend. Everyone got out of this healthy. That's what matters. The real stuff beginning Wednesday night. Leafs-Jets, you can hear it right here on TSN 1050. Puck Drop with 7. Pregame with the Tapman and Greg Gilbert at 6:30.
Yes.
Weegee.
We're going to be down at the Mill Street Pub.
Yes.
On Wednesday doing the show.
We will be
there.
So
I'm looking forward to that. We're all looking forward to it. We rarely do this, but because we caught up with Mike Babcock, because my knee is all banged up, because I'm on medications, we figured we'd give it back to the people.
You're on life support right now.
Let people revisit our conversation with Mike Babcock. And we began by the O-Dog actually throwing out the first question.
Ooh. Talking about a shorter training camp.
Maybe a 10-day training camp three exhibition games. Here's what Babcock said.
Well, you know, it's an interesting process. Players show up in such great shape now. You know, it's a totally different animal. The one thing the long training camp does is it gets you to know your whole organization. If you had a short training camp, you wouldn't know those kids at all because you wouldn't even give them an opportunity. So this way, you get to know your whole group. And saying that, when you're running two teams at training camp as a coach, it wears you out a little bit. It is what it is. Let's get on with it. I don't set the rules.
We were just saying, we're happy you guys escaped without any major injuries. I mean, how much of that is going through your mind when you play 8 preseason games, just making sure an everyday player doesn't get banged up?
Well, the first thing you do is really, the 8 exhibition games are 4 exhibition games. So your big guys play 4 games to get ready. You could play less if you wanted. It just gives other people an opportunity. The other thing we tried to do is by playing our big guys together the last couple, we were able to give them practice time and not game time, and we spaced them out. I think they actually had 3 practice days in between, if I'm not mistaken. Now, they would tell you that's too much practice, but I also think it prevents them playing back-to-back or doing anything silly that might get them hurt, and they should be ready to go now. We've got a real good medical science group there and does a nice job with them on the rehab and also on the preparation, and the guys seem to be healthy.
Mike, now you've had this core group for a year. Notice that, again, maybe this is from the outside, that you seem to be being a little bit tougher on them, I guess. Is this the year, for lack of better words, to kind of drop the hammer on some of these guys to get them to that next level? And I'm not going to name names, but it just seems like now you've got them to a point where you're hoping you're turning the corner. You get on top of them a little bit more to make sure that their details are strong and they're able to get to that next level.
Well, I'd like to think, I'm just fair. And so, I think the beauty about bringing it every day in whatever job you are is you can stay in one place a long, long time because you're not always dealing with your boss. You just come in, you do your job. And I think that's the same in pro sport. If you bring it every day, and you don't get sick of the boss, the coach, because he's not dealing with you all the time. And so we challenge our group. We really believe we've improved our skill level here in Toronto. So the only way that shows is if your work comes first. And if you rely on your skill in the end, you're not going to win. So to me, we're going to try to make our guys accountable. I think we've tried to do that all along. Is the expectation for some guys greater than other guys? No question about it, just because who they are. We're going to try to treat them all fairly. One of the things that I got to be real cognizant of Toronto, if I say anything, it turns into a big deal. I got to do my very best to have most of my conversations private and not in the media. When I say something in the media, it turns into something I never want it to be. So I got to be careful, and that's on me.
So with that being the case, do you kind of plan out what you're going to say day in, day out before you even get out there?
Well, I don't know if I plan out, but I try never to put myself in too bad of spots. And, you know, I think that's the beauty of understanding what you're getting yourself into. You cannot take it back, anything you say. And you can take it back with the player. You can't take it back with the guy's wife or the guy's family. And it goes on and on and on for days. If you ever have any good sound bites, they can play forever, and so you got to be careful with that.
What about using the media to get a message out? Do you feel like you have to do that?
No, I shouldn't do that, actually. And when I do, I don't like it. So anytime I've crossed the line, I try to address it the best I possibly can. I think when you talk, I don't know how many days a year I talk, too many, and you talk as much, you're going to have some screw-ups. That's just the reality of the situation. Would you like to be able to take some stuff back sometimes? You know, words come out of your mouth. I don't care if you're talking to your wife, your kid, whoever. Sometimes you like to kind of, they're coming out of your mouth and you like to reach and grab them before they got out there. You know, nothing wrong with apologizing.
With Leafs head coach Mike Babcock, the real stuff beginning Wednesday night in Winnipeg. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. You're going into your third season, and the previous 2 years were drastically different. The first year you guys finished dead last. You were calling for pain, and man, did we feel it throughout the city and throughout the fan base. Last year, one of the surprise teams in the league, one of the most entertaining teams in the league, but I don't think people were really expecting the playoffs, at least from the outside going into it. This year, very different story. How do you feel about this season? How's your approach compared to the previous two?
Well, I think we're really excited about the season, and saying all that, you look around the league, and the parity to me seems unbelievable. Like, I go through our schedule at the start here, and you're saying to yourself, there used to be, in the old days when I coached the Red Wings, there was teams you just beat. You flat out beat them. Whether you're prepared or not, you beat them. That's not the way it is now. It's just, if you're not prepared, you're not going to win. And so, you always hope to get lucky with injuries. If you can get lucky with injuries, and then we get better each day. And like I said, we put our work before our skill. That'll set us up to be a real nice team and a fun team to watch, and it should be exciting here in Toronto.
I don't think any coaches put too much stake into preseason, but you kind of got to be happy with where Freddie Anderson's at. A lot of talk about Matthews and Nylander and the skill and the amount of points they put up, but he kind of quietly had a really good camp, didn't he, where he just looks really confident in the net?
Well, you know what? He's one of the most impressive stories over the summer, the amount of work he did. He really was a good pro and got to work, and he's come here way more confident, knows the situation, knows what Toronto's like, feels good about his teammates, and that showed in training camp. Now, just like all of us, it starts, and so what you did in training camp or exhibition doesn't add much. Now, I'd rather tell you the truth, win some games in exhibition. You lose them all, the doubt starts creeping. Confidence in sport is so important. I think our group feels good.
With Mike Babcock here on Overdrive.
Mike, you mentioned the scheduling, and it's always interesting. When the schedule comes out at the start of the summer, I always go through team schedules and look at back-to-backs and everything. Would you prefer early on to be at home a lot or get some of the nasty trips out of the way, like out to California and maybe some time changes and stuff? What's your preference?
Well, the first thing I look at is back-to-backs. I don't want to play back-to-back. You know, just by the stats and all that going in the league, you try to get the best schedule you possibly can. Now, TV controls some of those things, and that's just the way it is. The thing is, I don't want back-to-backs early. I think you can handle back-to-backs as the year goes on. At the start, your body doesn't recover the same in injuries. That's always a concern for me. I like the guys to get a good Christmas break. I really do. I think that's important for people. I think it's energized for people. So, like, set up. And after that, I don't much worry about it, to be honest with you. To me, if you can get out and get started and feeling good about yourself, suddenly the schedule isn't bad. I thought the schedule last year was so tough down the stretch when we go 14, and I don't know what we did, 14-something, lots of wins and hardly any losing. To me, if you build confidence, the schedule doesn't matter as much.
With Mike Babcock, let's go through some of the battles coming into camp and where they stand today. There was a lot of focus on that fourth line center position with a couple of veterans and Dominic Moore, Eric Fair, and then you brought over Miro Altonen. Where does that battle sit as of today?
Well, what we did, I don't want to say we bailed out, but in some ways what you do is here you are, did the kid win the job? If the kid didn't win the job, give it to the veteran. He's here. He knows where to stop. He knows how not to get minuses. The kid might have more skill. They tend to find a way to get minus early in the season as they learn how to play. We have an opportunity to put him with the Marlies, and it's just detail. He's competitive. He makes plays. He can play the game. Needs to know how to box out, needs to know how to play without the puck, and I think he can continue to learn that. And then Ferrazzi and Morrissey are real good pros, and we like them as people, and we like how competitive they are. They can kill penalties, and they can win faceoffs. So that, to me, that's why that situation worked out the way it did.
Do you know who's going to be playing in that role come Wednesday night?
Yeah, one of them.
The back end, obviously, was another point of conversation where I think people presumed Riley, Hainsey, Zaitsev, Gardner, Carrick would be a part of the top six. And then you had guys like Borgman and Rosen and Marinson and even Travis Dermott. Take us through that battle in camp, and where does that stand?
Well, we really liked that battle. I thought that was fantastic. And then Gardner turned himself into a really good player. I think has maybe improved more than any other Leaf. And then Riley has established himself getting better and better and better. And then to acquire Zaitsev, and you know, it took him a bit, but he became a real good player for us. Now Hainsey is newfound gold for us. Just his approach, the way he can skate, his stick's always in the right spot, the confidence he has, I think oozes through our group. And then Connor Carrick's game evolved last year. He got hurt and lost his confidence, but seems to be back. I really think Rosen's skating and his hockey sense are elite. Borgman's a huge man, 230 pounds. He can really shoot the puck. He's got unbelievable edges. Dermott really is coming. And then Marinson's a big long guy who is a good penalty killer. So that's where the battle is. I think that battle continues. I don't think it's set in stone by any means. I think the first 10 games we'll get that figured out a little better.
What did you work with Jake Gardner? Because before you got here, I watched some games where I wondered about his ability to know where to go on the ice, and there was some tough nights. What are some points of emphasis for him where you're just like, you worked with him and said, this is what works here, and to help him become a better player?
Well, the first thing we did is we talked to him every day. And, you know, I learned a lot as my kids became athletes who left home. So you go to junior hockey, and you're not a great player, you're just a good player, and no one talks to you for 2 months. And that resonated with me every single day, is you got to talk to these guys, whether they're good players, whether they're average players, you got to talk to them, you got to communicate with them, you got to build a relationship with them so they trust you, and then you can help them. And so to me, as much as Jake, where to put your stick, where to stand, how to box out, how to gap up, how to play, and much of that was just building a relationship with the guy so he could have confidence. And confidence isn't something you can give the player, but I think if you build a relationship with them and they trust you, they can earn it easier. And so that's what we've tried to do. And I think, like I said to you, by having my kids get older and leave home, I one athletes, and they leave home and they're trying to survive out there in their first couple of years, you learn from what's going on with them. And the things you hear that you don't like, you take a look at yourself and you say, well, I'm doing the same thing. Why aren't I dealing with this better? And so I think one of the best things has been just building a relationship with the guy and his confidence. His hockey sense is off the charts. He makes a play almost every time, and the swagger of the guy is night and day different.
Lastly, I got to ask you before we let you go, we've got an athlete here, our former one, our host, Brian Hayes. He blew his knee out standing up on the couch. In all your time in hockey, have you ever had a guy come to you and say, I blew my knee out standing up on the couch?
The worst I ever heard, honest to God. Guy running out for a pizza. This is no word of lie. I'm a starting goalie running out for a pizza. Ordering the cab comes to the thing. He slips on the ice. He slides underneath the cab and breaks his leg. That was the playoffs gone. What a terrible thing.
Luckily for me, I just have to sit here and speak, so we're not that concerned.
Nothing wrong with a little abuse either from the fellow.
That's right, exactly. The show goes on. Let's hope that doesn't happen to any of your players this year. The real stuff beginning Wednesday night, we can't wait for it. Good luck this year. I'm sure we'll track you down the road. Thank you, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
There he is, Mike Babcock, head coach of the Leafs. The real stuff again, kicking off Wednesday night. The Leafs in Winnipeg, puck drop at 7, pregame at 6:30, right here on TSN 1050. We will have that game for you. We're going to be down at Mill Street on Wednesday.
We'll chat then.
No, we're not going anywhere. We will chat then, but we will continue to chat this afternoon. Dirk Hayhurst will join us. We'll look back on the Jays season, Donaldson's comments. We've got an update on Derek Carr. We'll tell you about that next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app and on TSN 2. Don't forget to set your PVRs. If you can't watch it live, you can watch it later. Find everything podcasted online at tsn1050.ca and subscribe to Every Hour on iTunes. Don't forget to listen to Overdrive every weekday for the Upper Deck Leafs lineup player of the day. And on Friday, call in with the names of all five players and you can win a pair of lower bowl seats to see the Leafs take on the Blackhawks October 9th down at the ACC. The theme this week for the inaugural week is players who played for both teams, Toronto and Chicago. Today's Maple Leaf lineup player of the day is Eddie Belfour.
Ooh.
Eddie the Eagle, I wear bar gear to Hall of Fame nights, Belfour.
I know one.
Do you think his suit got lost?
No.
I think he did it on purpose.
I don't.
I think he wore bar gear thinking, this is what I want to wear after the ceremony. So he came ready to play, man. And I salute him for it.
I think in his mind, he was like, this isn't that formal. I'm just going to show up and...
I'm only going into the Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
Whatever. Dirk Ayers will join us here in a moment. Quickly, Derek Carr, fracture in his back, out 2 to 6 weeks. Raiders are struggling a bit here, too.
Yeah.
Toughest division in the league. Kansas City's legit. Denver's legit.
They had big-time expectations this year, too, bringing in beast mode.
Big time. That is going to be a problem. EJ Manuel.
Saw what happened. He got happened last year, too, when it went off the rails.
Yeah. Oh, they got smoked against Houston in the wild card game. All right, the Jays are done. Somehow they didn't finish dead last. I wonder if that'll become a selling point. Hey, we weren't last. They won yesterday. Baltimore lost. Here's Dirk Ayers, our Jays analyst.
Dirk, I got to ask you first. We were talking on the top of the show, and Brian thinks that yesterday Josh Donaldson was sending a message to management. Or what do you think of his comments? I said he was just simply saying, I would like to be in Toronto. If they can figure it out, great. But he thinks there was some message sending there. How do you kind of read into what Donaldson's comments were yesterday?
Well, interesting that Hayes would be, and I know you're, I don't mean to speak about you, knowing that you're right here,
yeah,
you know, that you're listening to, but I'm going to speak about you. So here's the thing, man. I mean, you've seen how many players say, you know, I'd really like to stay in this town for the rest of my life, and it's just such a great place to play, and I just love it here, and I'm just, I'd love to see something long-term, and I like this place, and, oh, wait, there's more money over there. Oh, hey, great, guys, I'll see you later. Don't bother writing, I'm not going to respond. I play for them now. Wow, so much money. Oh, my God, I'm going to buy so much stuff. That happens with players all the time. So if I'm Josh Donaldson and I say, you know, I like it here, I could play here a long time, I don't take any message received besides traditional PR by a player telling an organization, like, I like it here, I'd be willing to sign with you if you can come up with the right number. Because let's face it, I mean, the Jays need to go after Josh Donaldson, but the Jays may have just kind of faced the grim reality of, even if they did throw enough money on the table, a guy like Josh Donaldson is probably going to go someplace else, not for the money, but because he knows that other teams are closer to winning something meaningful for him. And I say that because, look, you know, if you've won a ton of personal accolades, you've been the MVP and you've set records and you get all the personal accomplishments you need, it starts becoming about team jewelry. It's like the player evolution factor. And what he doesn't have is that World Series championship, you know, he wants to go the distance with the team. And when you look around the Jays right now and you realize, like, they need someone at second base, it's going to be costly. They need an impact right fielder or a leadoff man. That's going to cost money, lots of money, you know, especially if you're going to go out and sign an impact free agent, not just a piecemeal like a Cliff Pennington or something like that. When you actually go out and get somebody that can get the job done. The Jays had a plethora of second-string all-stars. I mean, guys that off the bench would do really good for you, but they can't play all year long. They need those frontline guys. If you're Josh Donaldson, you say, if you break the bank on me, that pretty much means that I'm going to get paid well, but you got nothing in your farm system, really. And if you're spending it all on me, how are you going to spend it on these other guys that compete with teams like the Red Sox and the Yankees? So Donnie Baseball is going to tell him, hey, I'd love to stay here, and I'd love to see what you guys put together. But I think the deciding factor for him is going to be what else they can offer in terms of teammates.
But here's the thing. He can't find out what other money is out there for another year. So the Jays are the team that can exclusively negotiate with him.
Well, what's the number for him to say, I don't need to explore come a year from now?
Well, I think it's clearly a lot of money. I mean, I think it's
Is it $30 million a year, Dirk? Is it 7 years? Would he accept five?
Well, see, like, if you throw that kind of, like, money out, Manny Machado is going to hit free agency, right, same time. Are you going to pay Donaldson Machado money? No, because Machado's way younger. So you got to think about, like, I'm going to have exclusive rights to this guy, but if I'm him, I'm going to start looking around early, okay? I'm going to take – and this is a prime example. A season like this, when the Jays are this bad, guys start to look around and see, you know, if I could go anywhere, where would I want to go? Because I don't want to be here. And this year, there's been plenty of guys that surely had that conversation amongst themselves. This sucks. I can't wait to go someplace else. It's what bad teams are like. So for him, it's okay. You can offer him $25 million, 5 year, $25 million, 5 year or 6 year, $25 million is going to be the ballpark number. That comes from Steve Phillips as well. And I think it's an accurate number. I actually think you could probably get away with probably 5 years, $21 million, a little bit lower because he's going to be older by the time this happens. But even so, all of this doesn't really matter to me if I don't feel like you've done the right team-building exercise stuff this offseason. So I don't know, guys. I mean, this is an interesting question, and it's interesting for everybody who has a mega free agent. I mean, this is something to put in perspective. I mean, as we look at baseball as a whole now, everyone's hitting home runs again. So the amount of money placed on big-impact players that just hit home runs and strike out a lot, that amount of revenue, those guys aren't going to make less money just because there's more people who can do it. Whether the ball is juiced or the league has changed or whatever you believe it is, the money-making players will now be guys who can do it all. Run the bases really well. They can hit for average and make things happen at the plate. They have good defensive capability, and they're a lock at their position. And that's what Josh Donaldson does. So if you're going to go for him, you got to be able to throw that kind of money at him, knowing that that is your upside value, and it's going to depreciate quickly because of age. So if you're all in on all of that, I think you can keep him if you reinforce the team.
Here's my question on Donaldson then. If at what point does he just become a non-factor, like that they can't sign him? If he asks for, what if he wants 8 years or 10 years? You can't, you got to walk away from that?
I think the Blue Jays would.
Yeah.
I mean, look at their history. And, you know, I know it's a new front office and whatnot, but I mean, that stigma has stuck with them for a long time. I don't think that they're going to offer that kind of, you know, that kind of leash on a player. They rarely ever have in the history of the entire franchise. They rarely have ever done that. I certainly don't think they're going to do it for him. So, you know, it depends. Like, if you want to do 5 years for a gross amount of money, that's fine. That's what the Blue Jays will do. They'll rationalize that. But it makes it that much harder to move this guy. You know, I mean, look where you're at with Russell Martin, and look at how much salary you've eaten with Troy Tulowitzki. These are two big guys that are just weighing down your flexibility on payroll. So I always think that you're better off, and this is the weird thing about it, is I don't understand why the Blue Jays do the short terms. They feel like they're protecting themselves, but I would just do a longer term at a reduced price because then you can move somebody a little bit more easily. It's more palatable for another team to eat that salary. You get more flexibility out of it.
With Dirk Ahuris, another big part of this conversation, though, is this is a team that historically has had a very difficult time getting players who have never played here to sign as free agents to play here. And that is another benefit that they could play here, or another card that they could play with Donaldson, is by all accounts, he likes the market. He likes playing here. I'm with you. If there's more money elsewhere, maybe he takes that. But if, like for instance, Bryce Harper's coming up, Machado's coming up, they're not signing here. They're not going to sign here. They're not going to play here. They don't want to play on the only Canadian team. There's a long list of players who they've taken runs at, which with much lesser profiles than Machado or Harper or Donaldson, who have just said, no, it's not happening. I'm going to St. Louis. I'm going to the Giants. I'm going to the Yankees. They got to take advantage of a guy who is a truly impactful player that is aware of what it's like to live here, to play here, and by all accounts is comfortable with that. And I think that also factors into this.
Well, I agree, and I think one of the reasons that a guy like Donaldson is so important is because this is a recognized face around baseball who made his name before he arrived there. Okay, it was a big get, and there aren't a ton of guys who made their name before they arrived there that stuck around there for a long period of time. I mean, if David Price is still with the Blue Jays, you know how much easier it is to sign American only, you know, quote unquote, like your Patriot level, whatever you want to call it down here, the guys that don't want to go across the board to play. Those guys suddenly are like, oh, Josh Donaldson's there, David Price is there, this club, you know, it's relatable to me, I want to be there. So I think that having him there is a profound boon for picking up other free agents that might want to come across too, and it makes that signing, we've always talked about how the Blue Jays have kind of like a signing tax that they have to pay for out-of-country product, right? You know, to get me to go to Canada versus, you know, the team that's like a state away from where I grew up, you're going to have to pay me, you know, $3, $4, $5 million, something like that, a year in some cases, you know, or give me that extra year or whatever. So that somehow gets mitigated if you feel like you're more comfortable or more approachable or you're relatable to the guy who's there already, who's selling it on you. Because that clubhouse, it makes a big difference. And if you feel like they can do it and you can do it, then suddenly you will do it.
With Dirk Ahurst, how significant, it's an arbitrary number, but 200 innings, it means something. It's a talkable achievement. What does that mean to you in terms of Stroman and the injury past that he has, what he went through a year ago, the fact that he actually hit 200 innings?
Well, I think it's great that he's out there, but I think that 200 innings is significant to me in the way that he went about and did it, okay? So 200 innings, the way Stroman's pitching, is the way that I wish more guys achieved it. Went out there and had a lot of ground ball production, you know, weren't necessarily focused on the strikeout, which is unique because you're going to see this happen more and more. I think the 200 innings, and this is really why he's so valuable and why the Jays would be nuts to have traded him. I don't even know why we talked about that in the beginning or near the middle of the season. But to have a guy that can do that without the strikeout is huge because baseball has shifted to strikeouts. More strikeouts this year and more home runs this year. Those things seem to go up, connected to each other. If you have a guy that's consistently getting hitters to put the ball and play on the ground, it kind of mitigates the impact of the strikeout, even though, you know, if a pitcher can get the out himself, he should. But in this case, if you want a pitcher that's going to give your bullpen rest, if you want a pitcher that's going to eat 7 to 8 innings almost every outing, if you want a pitcher that can go the distance for you, who can rely on a team full of good infielders because they cannot sign big thumper free agents, this is a good fit for the Blue Jays, and it's promising for the future. This is something you want to build around. No, he's not an ace in the, like, go out there and K the side fashion, but he is an ace in the fact that he goes out there and he gives you so much quality per start, or at least has the ability to do so. So I love the fact that he achieved it the way he did, because to me it's repeatable. It's repeatable to go out there and continue to get ground ball. So I don't look at this as a flash in the pan milestone for this guy to say he did and probably will never get back to it. This is something that I expect him to do again next season and the season after that, because the pedigree was there. He learned from Mark Burley. He learned from David Price. I think he can improve on some aspects of their game, and I think you have yet to see the best of him.
Thank you, Dirk. Appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
Take care, guys.
Dirk Ahurst, our TSN Jays analyst. Jays obviously wrapping up their season. We knew they wouldn't be getting to the postseason. Many of us knew probably back in April.
Right.
We didn't want to accept it until maybe July or August, but past 2 years, we've been pretty lucky in this town,
right,
and
so
that will not continue.
Bad season.
They got to hope for a bounce back. I think the fans obviously are hoping for a bounce back. I mean, they're not going to tear it down and blow it up. It seems like they're committed to trying to get back on track. And
maybe
the
that's
big
a five-pack idea for Friday. The five things the Jays need in order to have success next year.
I like that idea.
I like that.
Mark it down. Let's do it. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. And some shocking news out of LeVar Ball's camp. We'll tell you about that next. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Monday nighter tonight, pretty good game. Washington, Kansas City. Prop bet Monday for the kid. Under the number, 275.5 total yards passing for Kirk Cousins. I like this Chiefs defense a lot. Over the number, 82.5 rushing yards for Kareem Hunt. Kid's been a stud through a few weeks. And Terrell Pryor's been killing me in fantasy. I'm going to finally accept that he's going to go over the number, 4.5 total receptions tonight. Come on, Terrell.
Let's
figure it out. All right, so get this. LaVar Ball, there's three boys, right? And we know Lonzo now is in the NBA.
Right.
I think the middle one is in school somewhere. LaMelo is the younger one. He's a junior in high school somewhere in the L.A. area. LaVar Ball has let the world know he's pulling him out of high school for the final 2 years to be homeschooled and trained by LaVar Ball. So this will end well.
This guy's a complete ass.
Like, this feels insane. Doesn't like Children's Services have to step in here and be like, are you crazy?
But you can legally homeschool. That's not...
But shouldn't you be qualified to homeschool?
I don't know.
Like, I guess you're right. It's your child. You can do what you want. But it seems like something you should be qualified to do. How is LaVar Ball qualified to homeschool anybody?
I don't know. Okay, I don't. Is he married? Is the mom kicking around at all? Maybe the mom is
Basically going to be no school.
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm thinking. It's 100,000 free throws a day.
Go to the gym and do your thing. And basically it's saying, forget about school, period.
This guy's a psycho parent.
Well, for the kid,
every kid's dream, to be honest.
To be homeschooled?
No, to just not. It's just, there is no homeschooling going
to
go on.
To not do anything, you're right. But to be at home with your parents all over you, that's not every dream.
What do you think LaVar's going to do? He's going to Google, what should I teach my kid today? Or unless he has some teacher background that I'm unaware of.
I'm not aware of one.
And you just print out a worksheet and say, there you go, there's today's work.
What is LaVar Ball's, like...
I don't know what his story is.
What is his background? Like, he never played in the NBA, did he?
No, he played in the NFL. He got signed in the NFL, or he was in a training camp with the Jets or something like that.
Right.
He was a pretty good athlete in college. I mean, okay. But I don't know what he does. I mean, he's in his mid-40s, so he's got to have a career.
48. But that's what I mean. What did this guy do for a living before he came? Became a complete jackass in the last year?
You would think of everything we've heard of this guy, you would know some more background. I don't have a clue. I just know he barks a lot. He yells and screams. Lonzo's at the Lakers.
American businessman and media personality. That's on
his
Wikipedia.
He's a media personality. I like that. Anyway, we'll track that story because I can't imagine that won't turn out to be just a perfectly acceptable plan.
Oh, he did. Here's his career history. New York Jets for 1 year.
Yeah, thanks.
Good
qualified.
Way to work.
All right, we're out of here. I will be making my way home.
You'll be fine.
Good job,
I'll be
Foots.
Okay. Good stuff today. Grit Grinder. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We will chat then.